Yes, and 3 o'clock means it's time for Martha Dean to bring us our regular afternoon quota of fun and information. And as Martha said yesterday, the deanery is jam-packed with the... Well, that's up to you, Martha, to tell them. How are you?
Hello, George. Good afternoon, everybody. The deanery is kind of packed with guests today. Some quite small guests, and we'll get to that later. Of course, I don't want to seem to repeat news you may just possibly have heard by this time, but quite a number of Americans seem to have gone to the polls yesterday, and Governor Dewey's early morning prediction, it looks like Republican weather, proved a true one. And in the true tradition of this country, losing candidates of whatever party sent their congratulations and assurances of cooperation to those who won the election. Mr. and Mrs. John Public, however they voted yesterday, will be doing much the same thing, because the country is best served by the sincere efforts of those from both parties. Contributing to the progress of this nation has never been a closed corporation. Here's a kind of amusing verse on the editorial page that I found on the editorial page of the Herald Tribune this morning, called Lines for the Day After Election, and written by Richard Armour. I won't read all of it. After all, you have your own Herald Tribunes at hand, and you don't need me to interpret for you. But the last verse goes like this. No cataclysmic conflagration as yet has swept our luckless nation. No sign of doom have I detected, although my man was not elected. Which is, of course, what I was talking about. Whichever side wins, whichever party gains or loses, once the election is over, we all sort of join hands and carry on together. Incidentally, having mentioned the Tribune, you'll find a full and complete report on election returns from all over the country in today's Herald Tribune. A really good job, which won't surprise us. We're pretty familiar by this time with the kind of reporting we can expect in the Herald Tribune, all of which is just another way of saying you're missing plenty if you don't read the Herald Tribune every morning. Well, let's see. We said that here in the deanery, things looked bright and cheerful, didn't we? And fun. We have three guests, as I told you yesterday we would have, two visitors from Hollywood, and I wish you could see them, and one young woman who seems to be pretty much at home in any part of the country, I'd say. She has some very special entertainment for us, too. As for Martha Dean, well, I seem to have something of a department of leftover business here, time having sort of run out on us yesterday. But, George, before I give this account of my doings, suppose you read some of that mail I brought up, won't you?
Why, sure, Martha. How about this letter from Irene Walters of New York City? She says, luncheons in party dress, cute as can be. I love the menus, and they love me. Then she says, and by that I mean that your clever Herbox booklet gives me menus and recipes which are really intriguing, but which don't wear me out during the preparation period. I certainly am glad I asked for my free copy. If your other listeners will take a tip from me, they'll ask for copies, too. Well, we hope they do. Just send a penny postcard to Martha Dean, W.O.R., New York City 18, for luncheons in party dress.
Thank you, George. Now for that report of mine. The Women's International Exposition is back in town, opened this week at the 71st Regiment Armory, with acres of exhibits demonstrating that women's work is never done. And if it is, they'll get busy and think up something new to occupy their spare time. Complete statement of feminine psychology there, if anyone has been trying to understand same. The extracurricular activities demonstrated this year range from sculpting in soap to raising Angora rabbits for their fur, not just because they have pink ears and ingratiating personalities. There are rugs like Grandma used to hook, and some of them should make such as the Persians sit up and take notice, too. And there are hand-carded, hand-spun, hand-woven wool scarves like great-grandmother used to make, of necessity. Her great-granddaughter operates a spinning wheel for fun, and yesterday's demonstration of her art proved one of the major attractions of the show. The walls of the armory are lined with the finest patchwork quilts and the most fabulous crocheted tablecloths. Handmade lace of the old pin and bobbin school competes with knit lace of spider web fineness for attention. Particularly noted, a determined-looking gentleman trying to get the hang of one of those multiple bobbins, muttering something about darndest contraption he ever saw. His respect for the nimble-fingered woman demonstrator had increased several 100% by the time he gave up. Then there's sleek modern silver jewelry turned out in one craftswoman's front parlor, flanked by an exhibit of the ancient art of pen painting. Ann Cormier of Long Island does the latter and is the only person in the world who does. Pen painting, in case you'd like to try it, consists of applying carefully controlled blobs of oil paint with a pen to anything from, well, satin bookmarks to vases. An exhibit labeled Evolution of the Silkworm was bolstered by a full cornucopia of cocoons and a scarf marked Home Processed from Worm to Finished Product. And the wildlife department was completed by a box full of earthworms busily at work chewing up dirt around an ivy plant, the better to make it grow, we were told. Don't think that raising earthworms constitutes a hobby. It's a several thousand dollar a year business conducted by an intrepid lady from Ohio, and she'll sell you a couple of hundred capsuled earthworms without batting an eye. Of course, it occurred to me, though I didn't say this to her, that it might be easier to get a bottle of new plant life to make your plants grow than going out and buying capsules full of fishworms, I mean earthworms, and depositing them in the pots of houseplants. I might be prejudiced about new plant life, but it is true that new plant life is used by a great many greenhouses, and a great many of our listeners are finding out that using new plant life around houseplants in the house has much the same effect on these as it does on plants in greenhouses. New plant life is a scientific formula, you know, and it will make houseplants grow. In fact, it's guaranteed to make houseplants grow beyond your fondest expectation, and if it doesn't, you can get your money back. You can buy it in 10-cent stores, like Cress's, or at your florist. And if your florist doesn't have it, you just ask him to order it from his florist supply place. Now, where was I? Oh, I know, down at the Armory. There are fishworms just got me off in a new plant life. There are 570 different exhibits of arts and crafts at the exposition this year, and that, I should say, takes in almost any form of handwork known to man, I mean to women. Pressed flowers arranged between two layers of transparent plastic make handsome lampshades. On the other hand, if you have no real flowers available, one crochet expert down there will turn out a bunch for you. She crocheted her own daughter's wedding bouquet. Pastel-tinted seashells are turned into a variety of costume jewelry, and intricate doll furniture is made of, oh, everything from ordinary cardboard to twigs from last year's Christmas tree. There are dolls made of dried apples and pictures made of real flowers. Wood carving, copper work, basket weaving, shoemaking, clay modeling, and oil painting, each one has its exponent, and each one shows up somewhere in the current exposition. There was just one sign which left me feeling a little unhappy. It appeared at a booth where a number of ladies were busily working with long strips of braided material. And the sign read, "Rugs from discarded men's trousers." Somehow or other, the idea of those discarded men still bothers me. P.S., if you're planning to see the exposition Thursday afternoon, tomorrow, I hope you'll drop around to the Associated Blind booth. That's booth 49, because I'm going to be there about 4:30 or 4:45 tomorrow, and I'd love to see you. I'd love to meet you. In the Armory, you know, at Park Avenue and 34th Street. I'll be there.
And we'll be there, Martha, asking for autographs, if you don't mind.
Oh, were you invited?
No, but I'm shoving in just the same, if you don't mind.
All right, I'll take you. And Giff Campbell, too.
Well, good. Well, the autographs on this letter I'm about to read is, one autograph, is Janice Weingarten of the Bronx. And she says, "I got my first bottle of Sage Air Refresher last week. I'm delighted with it. And having that wishbone wick attached to the bottle cap is wonderful. Makes Sage so easy to use." Well, to that I'll just add that note, a 6-ounce bottle of Sage Air Refresher costs 49 cents. You'll find it at drug stores, department stores, including Macy's, and at food stores, including the A&P. Now, just one more little reminder. Scoop for dishes, laundry, and housework. You no longer waste money on extra products for the different jobs. Scoop alone does all three. So ask for Scoop at your grocer's today. You'll know it by the midnight blue box with the big white letters S-C-O-O-P.
Does that awfully well, doesn't he, Bobby?
I can spell.
Our guests this afternoon, two of our guests this afternoon, are Bobby Driscoll and Luana Patton. Luana and Bobby are co-stars of the new Walt Disney picture, Song of the South, which is a picture, as you probably know, based on the famous Uncle Remus stories. And is the Song of the South your first movie, Luana?
Yes, it is.
How old are you?
I'm 8.
Is it your first picture, Bobby?
No, it was my 9th.
You've really been in a lot of movies, haven't you?
Yeah.
Are you 8, too?
No, I'm 9.
Uh-huh. Kind of old. Well, what are some of the other pictures you've been in?
Well, Sullivan, Lost Angel, Susie Slagle. Identity unknown. I can't remember all.
OSS?
Yes, OSS. Uh-huh.
So goes my love.
So goes my love.
George and I kind of know about you, too. How old were you when you made your first picture?
6.
Mm-hmm. You've done all those in the last 3 years, huh?
Yes.
And you'd been a model before you became a movie star, hadn't you, Luana?
Yes.
Tell our listeners about that, how you started being a model.
Well, how I started to be a model, I was 3. And these people saw me playing on the beach. So they took me down to Laguna Beach in Hollywood, you know?
Uh-huh.
Rather in Long Beach.
Uh-huh.
Well, they took me down to Laguna Beach, and I just got friends with them, so they took pictures of me.
Uh-huh.
So when I was about 6 years old, Mr. Disney saw me on the front of a magazine. I think it was Woman's Home Companion.
Was it?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
He saw me on the front of Woman's Home Companion, and he called up Mr. Maddick, so he wanted to test me.
Uh-huh.
So I tested for Jenny, and I got Jenny Favors in Song of the South.
Because my personal opinion is that anybody who'd see that little face on the cover of anything would want to take it home and do something with it, maybe just keep it, that's all, and sort of have it around to look at. Christmas probably. Well, Disney had better ideas what to do with you than just keep you around to look at. Now, tell us a little. Bobby, why don't you tell us a little bit about the picture Song of the South, will you?
Well,
I said it was based on the famous Uncle Remus stories, but you kind of go on from there and tell our listeners a little about it, will you?
Yes. I'm a rich man's son, and I come out from Atlanta to this plantation, and I meet Uncle Remus, and this colored boy, and he shows me Uncle Remus, and I hear a lot of stories from him, and I meet Luana.
Mm-hmm. And then what happens, Luana?
Well, see, where I really came into the picture, I was in my front yard, you see, and I had these 2 very, very mean brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So they tied a string onto my dog's tail,
mm.
And I didn't like it, see, so I took the dog away from them, and they said that they were going to drown him. See?
Uh-huh.
They were teasing me. So the dog, it gets away from me, and it goes over to Bobby at the fence.
Uh-huh.
And Bobby picks it up, and the 2 boys start an argument with him.
Uh-huh.
So I walk over, and I take the dogs from him. And when Bobby starts to go away, they start calling him a little boy wearing a lace collar. Because he had a little lace collar on.
Uh-huh. Because he was a rich man's son.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, but what finally happens? You two sing in the picture, too, don't you?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Have you done any singing in pictures before?
No.
Mm-hmm. Where was your home? Was in California. Always has been, hasn't it, Luana?
Yes.
Are you a Californian, too, Bobby?
No, Iowa.
Iowa, huh? How'd you get in pictures?
Well, my father got sinus, and so we had to come out to California from Michigan, and so this barber in Pasadena told me I should be in the movies, and so one Sunday he invited us out to his home, and his son was there, and we found out his son was in the movies, and his son got me an appointment with his agent, and his agent took me out to part with Lost Angel, and I got my first part.
Mm-hmm. Do you like pictures?
Yes.
I kind of want to know, I'm sort of pry into your private life right now, Bobby. I want to know how you work out the business of going to school. How do you do that?
Well,
you have to be on the set at 5, 6 o'clock in the morning?
Oh,
away?
No. 9 o'clock, and we have 3 hours of school. And
Where do you go to school?
Right on the set.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And we have 3 hours of school and 4 hours of work,
uh-huh,
and 1 hour of lunch.
And that's the way your day goes all the while you're making pictures, huh?
Well,
that's all right. You don't go to... What about you? Do you go to school the same way?
Yes.
Well, I might have known you go to school. After all, you said you were 8, didn't you?
Yes.
But you're so little. Luana is much smaller than Bobby, so I kind of forget that he's only 1 year older than she is. But you go to school the same way, huh?
Yes.
Did you like doing this picture?
Yes, I have.
Where did you make it? Right out in California, or did you go south for it?
Well, we went to Phoenix, Arizona,
uh-huh,
to make where the plantation was. We went out there to make the part.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I wanted to talk about the song that you two sing in the picture, because you sort of indicated that if I'd be very nice to you, you might sing it for me. Have I been quite nice?
Yes.
And you're going to sing it?
Yes.
You see?
Yes.
Hey, it's been nice, George. tell a little bit about the song, Bobby. Tell our listeners the title and a little bit about it, where it comes in the picture.
Zippity-doo-dah. And it comes in where, right after I leave the Faber's home. Uh-huh. And Luana comes up and asks me my name, and she gives me her little dog for my, and I trade her my little lace collar. And so we get in this boat down near the mill pond, and we go out, and we start singing Zippity-Doo-Dah.
Just as you're going to do now, huh?
Yes.
Good.
Zippity-Doo-Dah, zippity-ay, my, oh, my, what a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine heading my way. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay, Mr. Bluebird's on my shoulder. It is the truth, it's actual, everything is satisfactual. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay, wonderful feeling this way.
Wonderful harmony.
Wonderful children, these. I wish all of you listening could see these two faces because they're quite charming, and we could really do with a little television around this Studio 7 today, couldn't we?
I should say.
Thank you ever so much, and I hope you won't go too far away because we have another guest, and I think you're going to like hearing her talk, too. So don't go too far away, will you? Now, while George is kind of playing host, I'll put in a word for Pratt's Fresh Frozen Foods. Have you tried Pratt's grit-free spinach and Pratt's frozen lima beans? Baby limas from the Eastern Shore. You know, they're young and tender and they're delicious. And they were picked just before they reached maturity and frozen the day they were picked. I won't say that they're better than baby limas that you picked in your own garden and cooked immediately after picking. I will say, though, that they're much better than lima beans that were picked and shipped a long distance and allowed to stand around a couple of days before you get them. Vegetables begin to lose their vitamin content and their flavor, you know, from the moment they're harvested, and then keep on losing more of same every hour that they're out of the ground or off the vine. Well, Pratt's vegetables don't stand around after they're picked. They're cleaned and frozen immediately. All of the flavor and all of the vitamin content is intact. Same is true for Pratt's fresh frozen fruits, those plums I've been mentioning, for instance. Really wonderful, Pratt's fresh frozen plums, and I hope you'll try them soon. They're really something to have around the place. Now, I could remind you that RKO's movie, Lady Luck, with Barbara Hale and Robert Young, is right much fun. Pew Magazine says that Lady Luck never underestimates the power of a woman. I think that's a very good idea. Anyway, if you hurry, you can still see Lady Luck at the RKO Palace Theater, Broadway and 47th Street. Now, our other guest this... Oh, one more reminder about Burmill rayons, which we seem to have been mentioning pretty often recently in connection with various fashion shows. No wonder, either, because Burmill rayon fabrics are really handsome and they come in pretty exciting colors, I think. Of course, as I've also said, I think Burmill is a name to put on your Christmas shopping list. There are nice Burmill rayon slips and a fine variety of blouses and housecoats and pajamas, which should make someone very happy on Christmas Day and in the days that follow because, as you know, Burmill fabrics wear well. Burmill is really a mark of quality, regardless of price, and Burmill fabrics look well after repeated launderings or trips to the cleaner. Now, here we are with our third guest today, Mrs. Winifred Jacobson. Mrs. Jacobson is a young American pianist who made her debut at Town Hall in the fall of 1944, and since then has given concerts in Washington, Wilmington, and a great many other places. You're living in Wilmington now, aren't you, Mrs. Jacobson?
Yes.
Tell our listeners a little bit about what you're doing down there, because you sound to me as though you're having a very fine time.
I am. I'm having a marvelous time, but I got myself mixed up in two programs. One, short piano program of... some material which I believe is rather successful over the air. We usually hear rather brilliant pieces from pianists, and I'm doing some miniature programs of music of a rather delicate character. Mm-hmm. And I believe that there is a place in the stream of radio programs for this kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're teaching, too, aren't you?
Yes. Yes, I do several days of teaching. Mm-hmm. I love that very much.
Have you given any concerts recently?
Well, these radio programs have been involving most of my time. Mm-hmm. The other program, which I think would be of interest to your listeners, is the one in which we're using radio for music education. Supervisor of Newcastle County Schools and I, and a third literary friend, are working on a project aimed particularly for fifth and sixth grades. And the programs are correlated with their social studies. For instance, the fifth grade is studying colonial America. So we explore that territory in that period of the Swedes landing on the Delaware and so forth. And a very delightful lesson plan, it doesn't sound as stuffy as the name might, is sent to each teacher a week preceding the broadcast. And then the students are more or less prepared for the program which follows. And then sixth grade is doing Latin America. And that is really the interesting field for me, because that music is very unfamiliar. And as I've been finding out, it's very difficult to secure, particularly for piano. And I've been scurrying around all day in and out of music publishing offices trying to find that material, and it seems as though the publishers themselves are trying to find it.
That sort of sounds familiar, doesn't that usually happen when we try to find a bit of music around here to go with anything, George?
That's right.
It seems to me that I remember you disappeared once and didn't come back for 2 weeks looking for a certain piece that somebody wanted played on the program for something.
Lost in the library.
Well, the really big idea behind it is, of course, One World, and to give students another point of contact and another channel, more or less, of understanding mm-hmm. of the music of other countries. And we're not so terribly interested in whether they always like it. No.
My eyebrows went up a little. Now here's my chance to speak to a teacher face to face. I want to go into that business. Now here's another teacher saying she's not really interested in whether we like it or not.
Well, we always have music that we're sure they will like. But we often don't like things that are foreign or that we don't know. Mm-hmm. And, of course, what we're trying to do is to make them a little less foreign and a little more familiar. Sure. I think the things that we have in common with people are the things that we enjoy, and we're just extending this having things in common.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a fascinating fascinating things you're doing down there. Yeah. I want to have you tell our listeners a little bit about you. How did you get started on this piano career? Were you a prodigy?
Well, no.
Did you start?
I was very lucky. You know, some people are good in spite of their teachers, and some people are good anyway. Well, I was very lucky. I had very wonderful teachers in Washington, D.C., which was my home. Mm-hmm. And, I gave my first recital when I was 12, but that isn't terrifically significant these days. And then in the late 20s, I was in the Juilliard Graduate School. Of course, I studied with James Christian mm-hmm. There. And then I've had some opportunities to go to England to study with the famous Tobias Matte. Mm-hmm. And I think if the listeners know that Myra Hess was more or less brought up by him, they'll mm-hmm. will know who he is. He lived about 87, and he died this mm-hmm. is last Christmas. Mm-hmm.
Well, what are you going to play for us here today, Mrs. Jacobson?
Well, the music that I've chosen is of the character that I was speaking of before. First, a Scarlatti Sonata in E major. That doesn't distinguish it very much because he wrote over 500 of them. And then three short pieces of Henry Purcell, a hornpipe, a minuet, and an air.
Good. That'll be very nice. We will, I just want to tell you that Luana and Bobby didn't leave. They're right here to listen to.
Thank you. beautiful sonata and
nicely performed. Now the pieces by Purcell. Better than bright, clear, and crisp piano, and she plays it, doesn't she?
She certainly does. Now, I just about have time to tell all of you that our guests today have been LaVonna Patton and Bobby Driscoll, two young motion picture stars, and Mrs. Winifred Jacobson, a young American pianist. And I also want to tell you about our guest for tomorrow. Do I have time to do that,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Hogan? Well, stop giving me dirty looks, then. Our guest for tomorrow is an old friend of George's and mine. He's a man who's full of anecdotes about the theater and theater people, and he has just come back from the South Pacific. Was out there a good long time.
Well, the Dean will be back then tomorrow at 3.
Goodbye, everybody.
This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Stay tuned for a roundup of the news brought to you by John Gambling, which follows immediately. Tonight at 10 o'clock, we invite you to the Scalamandre Concert Hour, a program of some of the world's finest music, which we present every Wednesday evening. Tonight's program will include music from Othello, Faust, and La Traviata, with Mary Henderson and Hugh Thompson as soloists, and Emerson Buckley conducting. WOR, New York.